Good morning, everybody in the Bay Area. I'm Daniel Sokatch, the CEO of the Federation here in the Bay Area. Good evening to our friends in Israel. I think that's right. The purpose of this call, as Richard alluded to, was to give our community here, our Jewish community here in the Bay Area, the opportunity to speak directly with and be in contact directly with people who are not only some of our closest partners in the south of Israel, working on projects that we support and have been involved with for many years in the conflict zone, people with whom we have been and projects with which we have been in relationship not only now during the current crisis, but for many years, and to give the folks in the Bay Area both a sense of what life is like for these folks in Israel now, and also the opportunity to ask them questions, to speak with them, and to get a sense of what their support, our support here in the Bay Area, is actually doing in Israel, specifically in the conflict zone. I think most people know that our relationship to Israel is unique and something that we are extremely proud of. For over a quarter century, this organization and this community have worked with partners in Israel to support programs and projects and organizations that reflect shared values, values of thriving democracy, inclusive society, tolerance, and pluralism, things that we and our brothers and sisters in Israel are proud to call Jewish, Israeli, American, and human values that we pursue a number of strategies to promote. We do that both here in the Bay Area, and we do it with our work in Israel. So with that, I want to introduce the folks who are going to be on the phone with us today in Israel so that our community here in the Bay Area can know a little bit about them. I'll start by asking a few questions, and then we are going to, as Richard said, open it up to the community. The first person I want you to meet by telephone is Shmuel Yilma. And Shmuel was born in Ethiopia from a small village in Ethiopia, among the first Jews to leave Ethiopia via the Sudan in 1980 at the beginning of Operation Moses. He knew no Hebrew, but ultimately graduated, earned a BA in educational administration and an MA in educational counseling. He served in the Sanhanim, the elite paratroop regiment in the Israeli Defense Forces, was the second Ethiopian to win to become an officer, and in 1991, he was awarded special recognition by the current defense minister, then Commander-in-Chief Ehud Barak. He is the author of a book about his experiences, called From Falasha to Freedom, an Ethiopian Jew's Journey to Jerusalem. Today, he is the head of the Joint Distribution Committee, one of our primary allies. He's the head of their the area head for immigration integration. And he has been involved with our Atzma'ut program in Sderot, which, as most of us know, is a town close to the Gaza border, which has been living under for the last 8 years the constant barrage of missile attacks and the daily threats and interruptions of life that the rockets and missiles from Gaza have caused. We support Atzma'ut and have done for a while. It's a comprehensive family-based initiative to help Ethiopian-Israeli families succeed in employment and running their finances and making sure kids do well at school and all sorts of things like this. The next person we're going to hear from is Shlomtzion Cohen, who is a resident of a kibbutz and an elementary school teacher in the regional council near Gaza, with which we have close ties and which has also been under fire for the last 8 years. We've extended help to them by supporting various programs to address needs ranging from dealing with trauma and providing respite to long-term and providing respite to residents of the region, as well as providing long-term educational needs. Finally, we have Vivian Silver, who is the director, the co-executive director of the Negev Institute for Strategies of Peace and Development, a nonprofit association located in Beersheba, which was established with a view to promoting peace and sustainable human development. We support Vivian's program, which is called A Year of Joint Volunteering for Bedouin, Arab, and Jewish Youth, as part of our focus on developing a shared society in Israel and supporting volunteerism and community action. Let me also say, although we might not hear from her, we're joined by Gila Noam, who is our Federation's key staff person on the ground in Israel, someone who we think of as a close colleague and one of our angels, who is reporting daily and often nightly on what's going on in Israel. And all of us here at JCF, at the Federation, and whether we know it or not, all of us here in the Bay Area Jewish community owe a great debt of gratitude to Gila and her team for not only keeping us informed of what's happening in Israel with our programs and projects and partners, but also being on the front line of assessing, even in the midst of the conflict, where need is so that we can respond strategically. So with that, I want to give everyone a chance to introduce themselves and talk a little bit about the ways in which you and your work have been impacted by the recently concluded Gaza crisis. And we'll start with Shmuel.
Shalom, everybody. First, I'm very excited, and thank you for this opportunity. My name is Shmuel Ilma, and I'm the director of immigrant integration in JDC Israel. And my responsibility, including the Atma'ut program in Sderot, which is supported by your federation. And I was asked to share with you a little bit about my personal story, and including my experience from the last emergency in the South, and about the Atma'ut program in Sderot. So as you mentioned, I was born in an agricultural village in Ethiopia. And when I was 11 years old, I made Aliyah together with my family through a long journey of 400 miles. And actually, we were among the first families to open up the journey to Sudan in the early 80s in order to reach to Israel. Today, I'm married with three. I live in Beersheba. And as a professional, I'm serving my community and I would say the wide Weak Israeli society. And as someone who is living 25 years here in Beersheba, I was sure that it's the most quiet and safe place in Israel. But one night, 3 weeks ago, I realized that I was wrong. And that was the moment when the first rocket fell at the kindergarten where my daughter, Shai, used to live. The miracle was that it happened at night when nobody was there. And, of course, the building was struck. From that moment, our life here has changed. It was 3 weeks, very terrible 3 weeks, that day by night we were scared, forced to wake up several times in night and look for a shelter, since we don't have a shelter in our home. And my three children, stopped their schools and stay at home. So me and my wife worked only part-time so we can take care of the children. All our social and cultural life stopped at once, and we went out only if it was very, very necessary. But it's nothing compared to the people of Sderot who suffered from this situation during the last 8 years. Among them, there are 120 Ethiopian families who most of them live in the Nevi'im neighborhood in a simple house without any shelters. So they used to face a great danger day by night. But they are lucky because they have the Atma'ut program, which is supported by your federation, and which its goal is to empower the whole family unit. And we provide for 42 families tools that will make the families more self-sufficient in the area of employment, education, and family management. And by the way, Atma'ut is the Hebrew word for independence, because we want them to move to independence. And I must tell you that the Atma'ut program was almost the only address for the emergency needs at that neighborhood. Since there are a lot of activities, but maybe our time is limited, so I would share with you two examples for activities through Atmaut program in this emergency time. First, the shelter, which was built by your special gift in the Atmaut Center, became a center for social activities for children and their parents throughout the whole day, every day. And I would say it saved the children because they don't have nothing to do and they were not safe outside. So the shelter was the only haven for them. And second, for the these people who suffered from trauma and stress, the Atmaut program was able to provide a psychological service in Amharic, which is not available in the general city service. It was very unique, so they can manage their life. And there's a lot of things to say, but maybe another thing that I can add is that, which is I'm very proud about it, that once we help the families, we see that they start to give back to their community and to the white society. For example, some volunteers who were trained by the Atmaut program raised some money from the families themselves, and they sent packages to the soldiers who fought in Gaza with a warm greeting, which they prepared in the shelter, saying, "Thank you for fighting for us. We love you, and all Am Israel is behind you." And for us, it was very, very exciting that once they got help, they are... they can stay behind and give back to the community.
Thank you, Shmuel. Thanks for that update. I'm sure we'll have questions for you. We want to hear a little bit from Shlom Tzion on Kibbutz Mefalsim now, if we could.
Yes, you can. Good evening from Israel, and good morning to you all. First, I must say that I'm very excited and happy to talk to you. My name is Shlom Tzion, and I'm a teacher. I'm a fifth grade teacher in the elementary school in Shaar HaNegev, which is placed very close to Sderot, and where many bombs fell on it and around it. I'm a mother to a 16-month-old baby, and I live in Kibbutz Mefalsim, very close to my school, and less than a mile from the Gaza Strip. I would like to tell you that during these last 8 years, we have lived under an emergency routine, and we tried as much as we could to create a situation where the students have stability and a place where they can be taken care of by the teachers, by experts, and among other kids. These kids were born into this reality. Education in Shaar HaNegev is basically the most important thing because education means future. We take care of our kids. We keep an eye on them. We teach them, and we understand the difficulties. But we have never stopped believing that we must look forward. We must keep on creating plans and never let the kids feel sorry for themselves. Our school has moved not once from one place to another in order to create a safe environment and a routine. And every time we moved, we had less books, less equipment, less creative ways to teach, and even less pupils. Many parents felt the obligation to protect their kids, and they had to leave the area. But we have never stopped trying to create a normal life, a normal way of life where the reality wasn't normal at all. We have done everything we could, and I must say now that the help of the Federation was a very good way to help us continue and create life as before. And it is a very good chance for me to say thank you. However, our responsibility is to understand that our kids are under attack for many years. It is a continuing attack, a threat of attacks and bombs and alarms, and that you can never know where the fall is going to be and if you will be fast enough finding a shelter. Many of our kids need therapy. They need treatment, psychological treatment, and they no longer ashamed to say and to admit that they are afraid. I also must say that our soccer field became empty during the years. Swimming pools with only a few swimmers. People are not going out running anymore, not sitting in gardens. No more trips with babies in carts. And even the trip to school is a risk. Our reality has changed during these 8 years. The only thing that is keeping our community together is the school, where you can find students, teachers, secretaries, and others, all from the same area, and we all share the same reality. We work together trying to keep on living the same as before. I want you to know also that as a mother and as a teacher, always during the alarm, I'm dealing with the question, who am I taking care of now? Am I taking care of my students who need me to protect them, to guide them, to lead them? They need to look up to me. They need answers. Or should I take care of my own baby, my own family? Am I allowed to be afraid, or should I be strong and stable for my kids? Many teachers are dealing with this dilemma. And also we always choose our students because they are close to us. There's always a place in your mind where you think maybe you didn't do enough for your own children. Because 8 years under threat are a very long time, are very long. And I'm praying for different days, better days, days of peace and understanding. And I hope that these days will come very soon.
Thanks, Shalom Tzion. We all absolutely join you in that wish. We want to hear now from Vivian Silver, if we can.
Hello, everybody. Well, after those two presentations, it's really hard to switch into a different gear. What I do want to say is, as you can hear from my accent, I was not born in Israel. I moved to Israel 35 years ago from Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada, and I also live on a kibbutz, and I also live on a kibbutz right on the Gaza border. So everything that Shalom Tzion shared with you is very much the reality on my kibbutz as well, Kibbutz Be'eri. However, since you've already heard from Shalom Tzion about that reality, I would like to share with you in my second hat as the executive director of the Negev Institute for Strategies of Peace and Development in Beersheba, what our reality is here and specifically relate to the effect of the war on the program that you are supporting, San Francisco Federation, which is so generously supporting you. And before I forget, I want to say kudos to you for being the only donor of all of our many donors who reached out to us during this time of war and actually solicited from us what our needs are at this time. So more power to you. You've always been at the head of the game, and you continue to be so. Okay, we are running a joint Arab-Jewish gap year program. It's a full-time program for high school graduates, 22 from the Israeli Scouts Movement. That's 22 Jewish high school graduates from all over the country who are living in two houses in Beersheba for the year and partnering with 22 Arab Bedouin high school graduates who have joined this program as well. And what they do is work part-time 3 days a week in the Bedouin villages, schools, and community centers with youth at risk, and work one day in Beersheba in teams of Jews and Arabs. Now, living in Beersheba, working in Beersheba, and in the villages that have been in the range of the missiles has created a whole other reality for Jewish and Arab kids to go through together. It has also I would say, posed its own challenges to our staff at NISBA Tajik. Many of you know Amala Sana El-Hajuj, who is my co-executive director, who sends some of you her warmest regards. Our staff is also going through the challenges of going through a war together, running to the shelters at home and then coming to work and running to the protected area in our building, but this time together with Jews and Arabs. As you can imagine, there's not a shared narrative as to what is going on, not amongst the staff and certainly not amongst the kids. And that's posed some real challenges for us, and I think that we are coming through it with further fervor of believing in the path that we have chosen of shared citizenship. It's not easy. Blame on all sides, of course, who started and who's to blame. But it reminds us that we live here together, and we will live here together after the war, after the dust settles down, and we have to find what we have in common that overrides what our differences are, and look to see how we're going to strengthen that partnership, both the adults and the kids. And that means even dealing with the directive of the Ministry of Education that prevented the Jewish kids from going into the Arab towns during the course of the war. It was a little startling, and we're going to have to deal with that on the ground now. Why was it considered by the ministry too dangerous for the kids to go into the Arab towns and continue their work on a daily basis? We are using outside facilitators, professional facilitators, to help us get through this, again, both the adults and the youth. And I believe we will come through it with flying colors, but it's a process, and everybody has to understand how difficult it is. This is a time of crisis. It's a time of trauma. Trauma for our children, trauma for us, trauma for the youth. But Israel has gone through really tough times before, and we expect that we will get through it as well.
Vivian, I have a question for you. When we saw each other a few months ago in Jerusalem, you and Amal and I talked about the challenges of building an ethos of volunteerism in various sectors of the community in Israel with which you're working, and I wonder if the lessons that you're drawing or strategies that you're creating as a result of the conflict and working with Arab and Jewish participants, if there's a possibility that those lessons and strategies could be exported, if you will, into broader Israeli society.
Absolutely. Israel society is going through real trauma in terms of its relation to the Arab minority now. A lot of mudslinging here in terms of questioning the loyalty of the Arab citizens at a time like this, and back to the Jewish population, how can Jews with such high moral values condone what you're doing in Gaza? These are all things that we're working on together, and we will, at the end of this process, be happy to share our lessons with the rest of society.
You know, obviously war, as all three of our presenters have clarified for us, these kinds of conflicts tend to bring into sharp relief pre-existing divides or fissures within Israeli society, as they would within any society. And it's interesting this week in the United States, where I think many of us feel that we have witnessed something from wherever you stand on the political spectrum, which feels like a very healing step in the right direction. It's both painful to watch those fissures in another country we care deeply about, in Israel, be brought into stark relief. But it's very, for me, I think for a lot of us, it's a wonderful relief and comfort to know that the three of you and so many countless other thousands of Israelis are working every day to bridge those gaps in Israeli society, whether between Arab and Jew or Ethiopian and non-Ethiopian or rich and poor. And this is very much the theme of the work that this federation has promoted and supported in Israel for the last quarter century, to bring those on the periphery of Israeli life into the mainstream of Israeli life, to stand with these communities as they empower themselves, all because we all feel that this is a critical strategy for promoting a strong and vibrant and secure Israeli democracy. So I want to thank all of you so much for sharing with us about your personal and professional experiences these last weeks. We have a little bit more time, and we would like to throw it open for questions. Richard, would you tell people how they can connect with us?
Yeah, if you have a question, just hit star one on your phone, and I'll be able to take your question, and you'll be able to speak at that time.
I can see that there are a lot of you on the call, so I can't believe that we're shy, a bunch of Jews from the Bay Area.
Here we go.
And looks like we have some questions.
Here's our first question.
I have a question involving the propaganda techniques used by the Arabs. I've been in, this is Laurie Loquet, and right now on Maui. The press in this country has been overwhelming in favor of the Arab suffering as contrasted to the 8 years of our standing by and taking it on the head. And while this is not really in the province of the work of our speakers, I'm making a statement in a form that's to be a question to say that we really need to engage propaganda techniques that will let the world know what is going on, and we should not wait 7 or 8 years to do it. A modest amount of discussion about the suffering has been in the press this year, but it is one-sided. And 67% of Americans feel the Israelis are at fault and they have sympathy for the Arabs. I would like any comments any of the three would like to make.
Any comments, folks?
Don't be shy.
If I understand you, you are asking why the propaganda of the Arabs in Gaza looks much better than ours?
Yes.
Yes, okay. First, I must say that poor people in Gaza looks much better in the newspapers than our Israeli kids who are only afraid, yes? But our propaganda is really need to be much better. We need to learn how to do things better and how to let the world know that 8 years under attacks are much more important than only 3 weeks of attacks. And there's nothing we can do about the terror in Gaza, who is hiding behind innocent people, and that the only way to deal with it is while taking lives, and we are very sorry for it. It is very sad, but there's nothing we can do about it. I don't think Israel can make the world understand how. If you are not here, you can't understand. If you are not in this area, you can't understand that the only way you can deal with these people is by doing these kind of attacks once and for all. Stopping, taking away all of their equipment, and there's no way the world will understand unless they will come here and see it for themselves. Live 2 days in Stuart under attacks.
Thank you. Let me take another question here. Okay, we have a question that came in via email. Can you give us a specific update, particularly how the North is doing while the focus has been on the South in the past few weeks?
It's an interesting question because I was up North the other day visiting a program, obviously, that we support in the Hamiginim School. Some of you may have had the opportunity to visit, and where we adopted an entire school and are working really on all fronts to school in a very disadvantaged area. And I was sitting with the principal and with some of the school staff, and literally every 3 minutes, a kid walked in and said, you know what, my stomach hurts and I really want to go home, or, you know, I have a headache and stuff like that. And I, you know, was coming from Jerusalem and totally unaware of the reality existing up there, which is that every time there is a crisis anywhere in Israel, there's a real fear in the north that it's going to happen again there. And, you know, these kids are 9, 10 years old, and they've lived through much of that reality. And they're sort of on the edge at all times. And the staff looked at me and they said, well, of course, didn't you know? And they're, you know, they're doing really good work to try and ease this tension. But even when missiles and rockets are not falling in the north, the anxiety is certainly there.
Hila, let me ask you one more question, and we're rapidly running out of time. But can you try to give those of us in the Bay Area a sense of what your life as our point person, as our lead professional in Israel during this time has been like? We know that you've been running all over the place. I also know that you are never one to want to talk about your exploits. But if you could give us a sense of what life has been like for our organization's representatives in Israel during this time of conflict, I think that that would be helpful for all of us.
Well, I do feel uncomfortable in doing this, because when I compare, I don't have a story to tell that's anywhere near as touching and compelling as Shmuel and Shlomzion's and Vivian's, and I'm sitting in what is now safe Jerusalem, but, you know, who knows what the future holds. And I have to say that these crisis situations just bring to the fore very, very clearly what an amazing community I am privileged to work for. Because, as Vivian mentioned, you know, the first thing we do, I get the email from San Francisco, we just heard the news, what's going on? And right away we sort of put ourselves into crisis mode, and I think we try to listen, and I think we try to be sensitive and really listen to what the people are saying that they need, rather than just work from some, you know, very pre-developed list. And we are on the ground and we are listening. We've developed relationships with these people. We've developed relationships with the organizations that we support. So it goes far beyond just a business relationship. There are people behind these realities. And what I would say, you know, we have Shmuel on the phone talking about Atzma'ut, and that's a very characteristic program of San Francisco. Why is it characteristic? Because we're talking about a tiny community. It's only 120 families in Sderot. So why are we working with 120 Ethiopian families in Sderot? Particularly because it's a small community and certainly not vocal about their needs, they are likely to fall by the wayside. And I think what characterizes the way San Francisco works in Israel is the fact that we look really hard to make sure that we're filling in gaps. Sometimes we do things that are less popular because others probably wouldn't do them, but I think we can be very proud of that. And when I listen to Shlomzion and she's talking about how education is the future, here we have a different population, a population of kibbutzim that is very self-reliant, and it was interesting to me that she said our kids now feel comfortable, or they are able to say that they are afraid. But, you know, independence is sort of their ethos. And I think what we're doing there in helping them think about the future and looking beyond tomorrow and the next day and joining in them with them in trying to create a really good educational system in that area, and, yes, in treating children and helping them overcome their fears, that's another very characteristic Bay Area kind of operation. And finally, Vivian, you know, we are working very hard, as Daniel said, to develop a shared society in Israel. And when in times of crisis, again, brought into sharp relief is this very complex issue of Israeli Arabs and Israeli Jews. And to hear Vivian describe the difficulties, but send out this message that we're going to come out of this with even greater hope, I think we can be very proud of being a part of that and doing our little part to support these people as they deal with these very substantial challenges. So you're asking me how I feel. I feel really good, and I think you should feel very, very proud.
Thank you so much, Gila. And I want to, we've run out of time for the call, so I really, really want to thank our speakers, Shmuel and Shlomzion and Vivian. It was very, very touching and meaningful. We're really glad that we were able to hear from you. For those of you in the Bay Area who participated on the call, I want to thank you for taking time in your workday to call in. And this is the first time we're doing this, so we'd like to make this a learning experience as well. if I would love and solicit your comments, if you would please email me and let me know how the call went for you and what you think we could do better next time. So please give that call to me. Either call me here at 512-6218 or email me richardm@sfjcf.org and let me know how the call went for you and suggestions for if we want to do it again, how we would do it better. So again, thank you to everybody who's participated, and have a wonderful day.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you all. Toda rabah.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.